Truth Frequency Radio.
Hello, 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 ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the program. Thank you guys for tuning in once again. My name is JD. This is, of course, the Red Pill Report radio broadcast, and it is the fourth day of February right now. It is a Wednesday. Congratulations, ladies and gentlemen. We made it halfway through the week so far, and I know that's a pretty big step for a lot of us out there. So definitely want to encourage all of you guys to keep going. We're halfway through the week. It's almost the weekend. It's like Friday evening, as I like to, think about Wednesdays. Anyway, if it's bright outside and it is a weekday, then we are live right now, just like we are every day, Monday through Friday. And again, if we are live right now, that means you can go to truthfrequencyradio.com and you can get into the chat room. And we try and spend our mornings in the chat room along with you guys so that we can get some feedback from the show. You guys can comment on articles and things like that. So if you are out there listening, please head over to the chat room, join us in there, and we'll get some lively discussions going on. Today's guest is going to be a good one, ladies and gentlemen. We're bringing James Perloff onto the program in about an hour. He is an author and a historian. And right now, I don't know about you guys, but I'm trying to kind of get my mind around which boogeyman we're supposed to be afraid of right now. Is it Russia? Is it ISIS? Is it Ebola? I just don't know. So I want to talk to James because, as I said, he is a historian and a researcher. James is very good at naming names and weaving that thread through commonality. So what we're going to talk about is basically the historical creation of the Cold War, who was behind that, and then talk a little bit about the transition that has taken place or may has not. Maybe hasn't taken place. I don't really know. It's kind of difficult to say right now. We're kind of in this murky, in-between area. The Cold War went away and we got into the War on Terror, and now it seems like they're trying to ramp up the Cold War a little bit because the terror card's not playing so much. So anyway, those who don't study history doomed to repeat it, so it might be worth figuring out who was responsible for the initial boogeyman agenda and to try and figure out if some of those same people might be running the program today in terms of, you know, the War on Terror, figure out where we're at with all that. So again, looking forward to having James Perloff on the program in about an hour. Definitely recommend you guys stay tuned for that. I hope you guys enjoyed Karen Udis yesterday. I'll tell you what, that was some pretty groundbreaking, remarkable information that we were getting from her. I'd highly recommend everybody go and get that archive from yesterday's show and share it with your friends because I'll tell you what, the idea that there might be a global trust for humanity is one that a lot of people have been throwing around for a long time. But when somebody like Karen Udis, with her background in law and background at the World Bank, gets involved with that, that lends so much credibility to the idea that a trust like that could actually exist. So anyway, lots of great information in yesterday's program. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Tomorrow's program is not going to be any exception to that rule either. Stan Deo is going to be joining us again tomorrow. We'll be talking about prophecy. I remember the last time Stan was on, we were kind of talking about the idea of the Antichrist, whether or not there could be potentially an Antichrist coming back. And one of the things that Stan had mentioned, and I didn't even realize this until this morning, but his thoughts about the Antichrist are that it's going to have something to do with the name Solomon, right? That was his big thing. It's like that name comes up in the Bible as actually the name of the potential Antichrist. And look what just happened in Saudi Arabia. We now have King Salman there, which is obviously a takeoff from Solomon. And I think I want to talk to Stan about the Muslim prophecy, about the death of King Abdullah, and see what he thinks is going on in that region right now. I think he'll have a lot of insight. So tomorrow's show should be very, very cool in that respect. And then on Friday, we're going to have Richard Sauter joining us again from Ecuador. We're going to actually have him on the program this time. We're going to make sure the technology is with us. We'll be talking about underground bases, underwater bases, and kind of the history behind them, not necessarily what's going on today, but how they came to be, what kind of evidence there is to suggest that they're still in existence and still being used today, things like that. So definitely going to be a good week of guests filling out the week here. So give me just one second here, guys. I got to wet my whistle. Okay, whistle is wet. Anyways, again, thank you guys who are joining us in the chat room. Appreciate you guys being there. Let you know I'm not hearing any bumper music today, so I'm flying kind of blind in terms of timing for the show. So we'll just do our best. Again, it's Wednesday. We're going to have a good time. We have a lot of news to get to today for sure. Lots of things going on around the world. So let's just jump right into the international stuff right now. Probably goes without saying that the situation in Ukraine is not getting any better, right? I mean, we have been talking about this probably every day for the last 3 weeks, I'd say. You know, the Kiev government, Poroshenko, obviously trying to draft, about 50,000 people, and a lot of desertion going on the Kiev side, because again, we're trying to essentially pay people to go fight their own countrymen, which is just not something that is going to happen, in my opinion. But right now, you know, John, for the love of God, McCain wants to send more weapons over there. Barack Obama right now hasn't actually made a decision on whether or not he's going to be shipping lethal weapons to Kiev. But the commander of the U.S. forces in NATO in Europe, which is Philip Breedlove, he is saying right now that that he and other members of the White House and the Pentagon are starting to really support this idea of actually sending some lethal aid over to Kiev. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is supposed to be in Kiev tomorrow to discuss the issue of granting arms to Ukraine. And right now, eight former high-ranking U.S. officials are calling on the U.S. to supply weapons to Kiev worth $3 billion, including things like anti-tank missiles, drones, armored personnel carriers, and radar. So this really is pretty noteworthy because, you know, this supply, the whole concept of supplying defensive weapons to Ukraine, is really difficult to get behind that, since Barack was essentially on the news this week admitting that he brokered a deal to get Poroshenko put into power. So we brokered a deal. We've already spent $5 billion to overthrow the democratically elected, government there. We put, Poroshenko in power now. And, he has completely gone against the Minsk agreements that he came to with Russia and, you know, an attempt to, bolster the peace accord that's going on, supposed to be going on between Kiev and the rebels in the eastern Ukraine, so to speak. So here's the deal. You know, it's one thing to supply defensive weapons to them, but they're not really on the defensive right now, right? Because nobody in the eastern side of the country is attacking Kiev. They're not, there's none of that going on. There are obviously, Kiev paid mercenary type troops, as well as American advisors and NATO advisors over there who are leading the fight against the rebels. So, you know, the rebels are fighting back, and that's essentially what's going on. The rebels have taken over a few towns over there and decided that they want to be a republic. They want to be left alone. They don't really want their neighborhood shelled by Kiev, and Kiev is not having any of it. So again, right now it does look like we will probably end up sending more military weapons to Kiev, and they're going to need them too, because they're not able to staff their military right now. They're not going to be able to pay people, as I said, to go over and kill people on the eastern side of the country. So, you know, they're going to need more weapons. They're going to need more capability for the limited amount of troops that they're actually going to have, that will willingly go and kill their own countrymen. It's just such a deplorable situation right now. And, the fact that we, you know, as Americans have got such a large hand in it, it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy that this is going on and that, you know, we still have people like John, for the love of God, McCain coming on the news saying, well, we got to get these Kiev people some weapons because they're being attacked by pro-Russian separatists. Well, that's not true. It's all complete, you know, it's all a complete lie. But is the situation there going to get better anytime soon? I don't think so. I don't think so. So again, man, my thoughts and prayers go out to all these people on the eastern side of the country. I watched a great Vice documentary. Vice is a great news organization. I think they work for the CIA personally. That's just a side note, but I think that, because they seem to be embedded in some of the most crazy, ridiculous situations around the world, and they send these like punk, you know, teenage, college aged, reporters to go do this stuff. But anyway, they were in the eastern side of Ukraine yesterday. They've been there for the last month. And, some of the reports that are coming out of there and some of the total devastation that's going on, amongst the population there is just absolutely unbelievable. And it's crazy because we're not doing anything to stop it. We're not doing anything to stop it. We, you know, the entire debate that's being framed in Washington right now is whether or not we have spent enough money, to isolate Ukraine from Crimea, and whether or not we've given Kiev enough material and military support to wipe out a whole bunch of people that have been living in this country for a long, long time. It's just insane right now. Anyway, I digress. I'm moving on here. The head of the UN War Crimes Inquiry resigned this week after Israel alleged that he was biased against Israel. Okay, so the head of the UN inquiry into last summer's Israeli military offensive in Gaza has said that he will resign, or he did resign yesterday, I should say, following Israeli allegations of him being pro-Palestinian due to some consultancy work that he did for Liberation Organization a couple of years ago. William Shabas, who is a Canadian academic living in the UK, was appointed last August to head the UN Rights Council's three-member team to probe the circumstances of the Operation Protective Edge and all of the allegations of the war crimes. His candidacy, however, was met with very strong resistance from Israeli officials who accused Shabas of being anti-Israeli because a few years ago he wrote a legal opinion for the PLO and received about $1,300 for the job. But he does insist that when he did this, that his advice was no different than he would have given to any other organization or government. His views on Israel and Palestine, as well as many other issues, were well known to the public well before he was tapped to do this human rights thing. But Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called on the entire UN report now to be scrapped because of Shabas's resignation, claiming the move proved that he was essentially an anti-Israeli body. So again, Netanyahu's going to grasp at anything he can possibly do to remove blame from him for the travesty that took place in Gaza over the summer. And hopefully the UN will not take that into consideration. They'll just replace Shabas with somebody a little less, I don't even know what the word is. Sometimes my brain just locks up, guys. Sorry about that. Okay, more news coming out of Greece right now. We've been talking about this a lot, too. Greece has kind of been back and forth, going back and forth as to whether or not they were going to, go anti-austerity and completely reject the EU, or whether or not Tsipras was going to kind of toe the party line and try and placate his people a little bit. But it looks like now the new Greek government, will oppose a proposed free trade agreement between the EU and the US and also attempt to block its ratification. So Greece's Syriza government, led by Tsipras, will use its parliamentary majority to reject the EU-US trade pact, according to Greece's new deputy minister for administrative reform. Let's see here. He also said, new deputy minister for administrative reform said that the government in Athens will try to veto the transatlantic trade and investment partnership TTIP when it comes up for a vote in the European Parliament, arguing that the deal has been negotiated behind closed doors and will most likely only benefit large corporate interests. So telling you a little bit more about which way the wind is blowing in Greece right now, it does seem like most of the cabinet surrounding Tsipras is going to continue with the anti-austerity motif that they've got established right now. And I got to say, I think that that's a great thing. I'd love to see I love this whole economic Russian roulette thing that's going on right now. I don't know if you guys find this as exciting as I do, but the economic world right now is in such turmoil, and they don't talk about it. You don't see it. But when you really start digging in, it's insane what's going on. The fact that we've held on this long just boggles my mind. And I think that if Germany even decides to blink, the EU is going to go away, and we'll be back to sovereign states again. And that transition is going to be, the ripple effects are going to be ginormous. Could be an interesting few months coming up here, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, Russia's got the new payment system. It is up and running. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but the first five Russian banks proposed or processed their initial payments via MasterCard on the 30th of January, according to Russia's central bank. So on 30 January 2015, the first five banks, including regional ones, started processing some Russian domestic MasterCard transactions via the national payment system processing center, implementing settlements on these transactions via the Bank of Russia. This bank said this in a statement just yesterday. The transfer of Russian domestic transaction processing of international payment system cards to the MPS will be implemented in stages and should be completely finished by the 31st of 2015. So although the bank statements didn't list which banks were the first five to successfully process the payments, previously it had been reported that Gazprom Bank, Rosbank, Alpha Bank, and Bank Roysa, S&P Bank, and Eurobank for Reconstruction and Development were considered to be contenders for the Pioneer in this flagship program. So the domestic step is the first one to eventually developing an international payment platform. And Russia started an alternative to the SWIFT international payment clearing system in December amid worsening relations with the West. And Moscow thought there was a threat. Moscow thought there was a threat that the EU would order Russia to remove itself from the global interbank SWIFT system, and so as it did with Iran back in 2012 over the nuclear dispute. So Russia essentially, worked really hard to get this alternative to the SWIFT program put together because they thought that they were going to be taken out of this international SWIFT program due to sanctions because it happened to Iran back in 2012 during the U.S. and Iranian nuclear dispute. So again, more indications that people are moving away from the dollar, and the fact that domestic MasterCards are operating inside of Russia right now is pretty big news, pretty big news. Moving back over into France and into the terrorism realm here, at least two soldiers guarding a Jewish community center have been wounded by a knife-wielding attacker yesterday in Nice, which is in southern France, and the country has suffered, obviously, a spat of hate crimes in the recent month. The attacker pulled out a 20-centimeter blade and struck one of the guards on the chin, and as two others tried to interfere, he swiped at them, hitting one on the forearm and another on the cheek. None of the injuries are thought to be life-threatening. The suspected attacked then attempted to flee by foot, but was stopped quickly and detained. The mayor told local television that an ID card with the same name, Masula Kalibali, which is a common West African surname, had been found on him. Maybe it's a coincidence that he has the same surname as somebody who was involved with the Charlie Hebdo attack a few weeks ago, but I don't really believe in coincidences. But anyway, right now some 10,000 extra cops and police or troops have been assigned to potential extremist targets following the Islamic attack on the satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo last month. More than 20 people, including the perpetrators, perished in the initial assault and subsequent crimes as the attackers attempted to get away. So the Nice attack comes on the Nice attack came on the same day as French authorities arrested 8 suspected Islamic State recruiters in Paris and Lyon. The interior minister there said on Tuesday that 161 anti-terrorist investigations are currently in progress, with 547 people identified as parts of a terror network. Though many of the recent attacks in the West have come from so-called lone wolves or radicalized individuals who plan to carry out the attacks without help from a terrorist cell. So that is what is going on in France. They are definitely not out of the woods yet in terms of terrorism. Also need to jump over to this story. ISIS allegedly burnt the Jordanian pilot to death. Well, the video came out yesterday. The White House is still trying to authenticate the video. I refuse to watch the video because I try not to subject myself to extreme situations of violence when I have to watch them. It's my, I'd rather just wait for other people to break the video down and tell me if it's true or not. But anyway, apparently what happened was that the pilot, who is Moath al-Khazabeh, the Jordanian pilot, he was captured in December, and this video came out apparently showing him being burnt alive. And so was it real? Difficult to say. The video itself was posted on a social media site. It's obviously not being shared with the media because it's pretty violent and ethical reasons. But it does appear to have been pretty carefully staged production. It's been shot from several angles, and the soundtrack was got religious hymns hanging out in the background. It also shows the pilot being led out into a square in front of a squadron of masked men before being placed in a cage. And a rope laying outside of the cage is then lit on fire, and the hostage then is engulfed in flames. This execution is obviously in contrast to the customary beheading videos that we see, typically practiced by the Islamic State. But Jordan now has come out and said that they are going to absolutely I think, let me, I want to make sure I get the earth-shaking response is what the head of Jordan is saying now, promising an earth-shaking response to the killing of the pilot. They had said that a couple of days ago. They do believe now that perhaps this murder or the burning of the pilot happened about a month ago, and it's taken a month for the video to come out. But Jordan had been threatening ISIS as an organization very, very strongly recently, saying essentially that they want their pilot back, and if they don't get him, it's supposed to be a very, you know, they're obviously going to have a pretty significant response. And Dave, I totally agree with you, man. I think this is something that we're doing to just get Jordan riled up. And apparently it's working. Jordan is obviously really upset. And a good point also, they did kill two ISIS members this morning by hanging. They killed one woman who had allegedly tried to detonate a vest bomb that didn't work. And she got caught and she was hung this morning. And I think another ISIS militant. So, but I don't believe that is going to be the extent of the response from Jordan. I think Jordan is going to mount a pretty significant response now that they lost a pilot. So, again, doesn't look like it's calming down over there right now. It looks like it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. But is ISIS real? Is it a real boogeyman? It's difficult to say, but Jordan certainly under the gun right now on from those guys. Let's see here. Moving on to some national news right now. There was a lockdown at the White House yesterday morning after a specialized bomb team was brought in to examine an unattended package across the street. The suspicious package was found in Lafayette Square, which is the park across the street from the White House. It forced the White House into lockdown for about an hour starting yesterday morning at about 7 o'clock, and an explosive ordnance disposal unit went in to examine the scene. They did not find anything. The lockdown went away, but just letting you guys know that there was a lockdown again at the White House for a suspicious package yesterday. We seem to have at least one lockdown at the White House every single week these days. And you wonder if that package was delivered by drone, perhaps. I don't know. There's a senator that believes now that restaurant employees should not be required to wash their hands, right? So right now we're in the middle of this big, huge debate about whether children should be vaccinated. But maybe we should move on to more pressing health questions, such as whether or not eateries can force their employees to wash their hands after use the bathrooms. That seems like a pretty good topic of discussion right now. But at least one freshman U.S. senator thinks, nah, no reason to force them into making their employees wash their hands because freedom. Okay, so Senator Tom Tillis, who is a Republican from North Carolina, at the end of an appearance on Monday at the Bipartisan Policy Center, volunteered a little short story about his own bias when it comes to regulatory reform. He started talking about a situation at Starbucks where he was talking to a woman about regulations and whether or not businesses should be allowed to opt out of them. And his coffee companion challenged him, asking him whether or not employees should be required to wash their hands. And this is what he says. He says, as a matter of fact, I think this is one where I think we can illustrate a very clear point here. He says, I don't have a problem with Starbucks if they choose to opt out of this policy, as long as they post a sign that says we don't require our employees to wash their hands after leaving the bathroom. The market, he says, will then take care of it. That's just one example, although I think he's very confused because requiring them to put a sign up that tells people that they don't require their employees to wash their hands, that would also be a regulation. I'm sure he's just a little confused. But he told this story with his right hand up just for emphasis, and he concluded that his example that most businesses who posted signs telling their customers that food workers didn't have to wash their hands would likely go out of business, obviously talking about the free market taking effect here. So what do you guys think? Do you think we should regulate businesses into, you know, making their employees wash their hands? I can't even imagine why somebody would think that that was not a good idea. I can't imagine, I don't know, maybe we don't need to have regulations specifically, but I agree with him that if they did put up a sign that said people are not told to wash their hands here, that those businesses would probably go out of business because I wouldn't be shopping there. So I don't know. I just thought it was very unusual. Maybe Tillman just a little bit confused about reality there. Who knows? Just wanted to point that out. Also, moving into some Barack Obama news here, the Obama administration yesterday apparently announced new rules offering slight adjustments to how U.S. intelligence agencies are going to be handling data collected on Americans and foreigners. This report came out in the New York Times this morning. The National Security Agency analyst now will be required to delete information accidentally collected about U.S. citizens that has no intelligence purpose, according to the newspaper, and similar information about non-citizens will also have to be deleted within 5 years. So they can keep it as long as they think it's interesting for 5 years, I guess. The new rules will formalize the White House's review of the NSA's monitoring of foreign leaders, according to this report. And the White House will, or had announced these rules yesterday. The Times called them modest, and the White House representatives have not been available for comment as of yet. So again, a little bit of a change in terms of how the NSA is going to be responsible for the data after they've collected it. Is it enough of a change to make anybody here listening to the radio show happy? No, of course not. You know, they're basically allowed to keep anything they want for as long as they want, as long as they deem it interesting or credible or having some sort of intelligence, value to it. And 5 years, that's a long time. That's a long time. So anyway, there was a robbery that happened in St. Louis last night. I'm just wanting to bring this up. Police in Creve Coeur are investigating an armed robbery Tuesday morning at the Schnucks supermarket where I had my very second job ever in the history of the world. I worked at the produce department at this exact store. Gunmen robbed this grocery store at 12 on Olive Boulevard there and fled with an undetermined amount of money. Police said nobody was injured. They're still looking for the guy. So if you live in Creve Coeur, which is a subdivision or a sub area, St. Louis, and you have any information about the robbery, please give the police in St. Louis a heads up. Okay, we're about ready to go to this break. We got a lot more news to cover when I get back from the break here, but let's talk about a couple of things that we do want to touch on. There's supposed to be a Bilderberg style retreat for the Bitcoin elite coming up here this weekend. We're trying to get some information about where it is. I've done a little bit of digging, but, Bitcoin elite gathering for a Bilderberg style conference could be fairly interesting. Also, the, CEO of the Gallup organization, you know, the guys that do all the polls, he's got some pretty interesting things to say about the alleged 5.6% unemployment rate. Spoiler alert, probably not that accurate, ladies and gentlemen. Also, I want to draw your attention to a new website called Dark Leaks, which is kind of a component similar to WikiLeaks, but I think you guys are going to like this a whole lot. Probably won't like the fact that the UK has now launched a massive propaganda campaign. And also, if you get your supplements at GNC or Walmart or Target, we got to have a serious chat today. There's been a pretty serious health story development in terms of supplements found at some of those major brick and mortar stores. So we're going to have to talk about that also. And got great news also for the folks of Colorado. You guys are going to get a little bit of a refund this year on your taxes. So we're going to go to this break. We'll be right back. 3 minutes, guys. Keep it right here. Your daily dose of deprogramming.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Doctor Ministries with Kenneth Emmanuel.
Sundays on True Frequency Radio.
Bit of a feedback session during the breaks to talk to you guys and kind of get everybody on the same page with everything that's going on right now. We're having a little bit of a Bitcoin discussion right now in the chat room. I know my friend Mr. Chef Bula is in there right now, and he's a big Bitcoin guy. So it's fun to see some of these people that I don't get to see very often just showing up in the chat room. Very cool stuff. Okay. Getting back into the news here, I do have a bad story. I got a report on this right now because it's still an ongoing situation. A federal warrant right now has been issued for a suspect in the abduction and the killing of an elderly Ohio couple, and he is believed to have committed armed robberies in three different states over the weekend. So an FBI statement just came out yesterday, said a $20,000 reward is being offered for information about 29-year-old Robert Clark. That's his name, Robert Clark. It says a warrant for unlawful flight to avoid prosecution has been issued for his arrest. Agents right now are also looking for 28-year-old Jeffrey Cayley Jr. and 26-year-old Tabitha Hazel, who are suspected of participating in the robberies right now. Now, the breaking report yesterday was that they thought this gentleman was on his way to Florida. There are still some people thinking he might be in Jacksonville, but there are also people who think he might be over there on the West Coast. But regardless of where he is at, they are still looking for him right now, and they are offering him a reward. This is not a good dude. So if you guys can get to redpillreports.com and get into the show section, you'll be able to find a picture of this guy. And I'll tell you what. If we can find him, that would be great, because I want to put it out there when something like this is going on, because this is how things get solved, I think. So anyway, that's what's going on there. Let's talk a little bit about Barack Obama. Also, we talked a little bit about the budget that he basically unleashed on the planet yesterday, and as part of that budget, it looks like it's going to be a great year for lasers and spy satellites and things like that. His budget requested Monday, again, requested an increase in research and development for all of those products that I just mentioned, the lasers, the spy satellites and drones and things like that. He increased the budget on those things by about $500 million. We brought it up to about $13.5 billion. He also requested a slight increase in the spending for DARPA's Advanced Research Project Agency, or DARPA, which would bring their budget to $3 billion to work on the next generation technology related to everything from synthetic biology to space planes, synthetic biology. So anyway, a lot of money coming out of this budget being slated towards technological advancements for the country, ladies and gentlemen, apparently. Not much going to the homeless people or things like that we actually need, but lasers and space fences, that's where the money's going to go. And NYPD, we got to talk about this too also. They've created yet another special unit to handle all of the issues that they are having arise in New York City, of course, by being terrorist occasional targets. So right now they have developed this thing. It's called the Strategic Response Group. It's going to be tasked with handling certain situations, most of which have not and do not occur in New York City. So essentially the New York Police Department Commissioner is saying, because terrorism and protests are basically the same thing, this new unit, the Strategic Response Group, is going to be designed for handling both. He goes on to say, he says, it's designed for dealing with events like our recent protests or incidents like Mumbai or what just happened in Paris, right? Okay, so it's designed for dealing with protests, the most recent of which were kicked off, of course, by the clearing of a police officer who choked an unarmed man to death. But the other two incidents that he cited really don't have anything to do with New York, other than the fact that New York sent some of its own officers overseas at the request of nobody. But apparently, the new unit will be armed to the teeth, as behooves riot protest cops. He goes on to say that they will be equipped and trained in ways that our normal patrol officers are not. They will be equipped with all the extra heavy protective gear, with the long rifles and machine guns, unfortunately, because sometimes those things are necessary in these instances. When exactly are long rifles and machine guns necessary in protest situations, would be my question. But anyway, the unit must be something pretty special, or its already existing counterpart must be pretty awful, because the Strategic Response Group will also supplement the 1,000 officer NYPD counterterrorism program, which has also been trained in heavy weapons tactics, according to a police official. So in addition to the 1,350 counterterrorist cops, they're going to do more surveillance as well. The NYPD is pushing to turn that city into the next London. And they are promising right now the addition of cameras in every subway car, accessible both to the conductor and off-site viewers at the police department. So again, New York City losing its mind in real time right now, developing a new tactical response team for both protests and really bloody terrorist attacks. They are apparently, according to the commissioner there in the NYPD, the exact same thing. So there you go. That's what's going on in New York City. They have all lost their minds. And so that's why I don't live there. Okay, moving into, I want to talk about some economic news here real quick, figure out where the market is at. Let's check out the indices. The Dow is down just a touch right now, about 70 points. We're sitting at 17.735. Dollar index is up a little bit today at 94.20. Gold, pretty flat. Took a little bit of a downturn there yesterday, but 1262 will get you an ounce of gold today, 1745 for an ounce of silver. And I want to talk a little bit to Bitcoin, sitting at 221 Bitcoin, down about 0.5% today right now there, Chef. And also the euro to US dollar, looks like the euro has gained just a touch. We're sitting at 114 right now at the euro dollar index there. Let's see here. What is going on in the big news? Well, I mentioned this a second ago that there potentially or is going to be a Bilderberg-style conference for the Bitcoin elite on an unnamed Caribbean island set to serve as the venue for a secretive closed-door gathering of elite Bitcoin CEOs and luminaries that is scheduled to go down this weekend. It is called the Satoshi Roundtable. It's going to be held from the 6th to the 8th of February, and is suggested of the famed Bilderberg Conference. Very, very suggestive of that. The annual meeting at which more than 100 finance experts gather in relative secret at the delight of global conspiracy theorists. They're talking there about the Bilderberg Conference, showing that the Satoshi Roundtable is kind of similar. Bula, you are not Satoshi, but if you are, I need a loan, so maybe get me an email. Organized by Bruce Fenton of the Bitcoin Association and Atlantic Financial, participants in the first annual Satoshi Roundtable included top executives from companies such as Blockchain, BitGo, BitPizza, ChangeTip, and a bunch of others. So the event is openly exclusive, and as such, the official website cautions that only 50 members of the ecosystem will be allowed to attend. The website actually says, even if you are a great person with many accomplishments in Bitcoin and lots of passion, we just won't likely be able to invite you. So speaking to the CoinDesk, Fenton discussed the big picture goals of the event, indicating that he strives to strike the right balance of transparency and privacy by being open about it to the press, even if details about what transpires there may be somewhat scarce. He actually says that he is going to post any of his speeches or interaction that he comes, that has to do with him in media. So you'll be able to see some of, at least from the CoinDesk perspective, what's going on in terms of Fenton's interaction there. He also elaborated on the nature of the event, talking generally about the structure and noting that it intends to be a gathering of equals with only some set speakers. The event right now is designed to foster relationships, interaction, tech development, deal making, and to provide a fun and relaxed but intensive environment to dive deeply into technology and the issues surrounding it. Right now, although that it's not listed on the website. There is an official GitHub page for it that does seem to name Punta Cana, which is in the Dominican Republic, as the formal site of this gathering. We haven't gotten an official on that, but it does seem to be likely that it will be happening in the Dominican Republic. And so if you didn't get your invite yet, sorry, you might not be on the short list, guys. Might not be on the short list. But Bitcoin, still trying to do something out there in the world. It's interesting to see what is going on with that all the time. OPEC leader, one of the OPEC leaders came out yesterday and caused a pretty big hubbub by saying or suggesting that oil could potentially go way back to $200 a barrel. And everybody freaked out and put them on the news and freaking out, right? Okay, it's not going to happen. And it might happen in a little while, but it's not that this guy came out and said, okay, we're ready to make these changes. We're going to stop the global supply and we're going to, you know, increase prices. He's just saying that essentially while everybody is looking for a bottom, that the actual industry itself has been shedding jobs, has been shedding production quite a bit because of the price drop, and that eventually we're going to get to a point where we level out, we're going to find a bottom, which a lot of people think we're kind of there right now. I didn't even look at what oil was trading at. I'm going to get back to that and see, because I owe you guys a price on oil. But last time I looked, I think it was between 50 and 55, which is pretty, yeah, okay, so right now crude oil's trading at $50 and it's down about 5% today. Brent was up about 56 last night, last time I checked, so a little bit different. But again, not a huge difference, not a huge difference in terms of oil. So I think that this, OPEC guy might have scared people a little bit more than he needed to. And I don't think we're going to see oil at $200 per barrel anytime in the next, you know, 16 to 18 months. I think that's a little silly. Whether or not it stays around 55, 60 bucks, I think that's probably pretty reasonable. A lot of governments around the world are kind of pegging that to their budgets this year. So hopefully they'll have some influence on that. An interesting report also coming from the UK, suggesting, and again, this is not confirmed right now, but suggesting that, Microsoft in its payment and billing section is getting ready to accept Bitcoin. Somebody took a screenshot yesterday in the UK on Microsoft's online UK-based store, and there was a button indicating that they might be either right now accepting Bitcoin as payment or getting ready to accept Bitcoin as payment. So if you guys are, again, I know a lot of people paying attention to what Bitcoin is doing, and as it continues to kind of blow over into different industries and different companies, you know, you had Overstock jump on board and they are volunteering to pay their people in Bitcoin now. All of those changes are going to be substantial in the long run of Bitcoin. You know, the one of the biggest things that, that Bitcoin has been fighting this whole time has just been acceptability, you know, recognition. And that is what we're getting now, that we're starting to see it moving in that direction with some of these major corporations. And I know, there's probably a guy in the chat room who's pretty excited about that. Wednesday, today, is witnessing the very first international investment conference in Baghdad. This is kind of a big deal. I don't know if you guys are paying attention to what's going on in all the economies around the world. Iraq is one of those ones I pay attention to. So the Parliamentary Economic Committee will hold the very first international investment conference in Baghdad. I can't tell if it's today or if it's next Wednesday. This article came out last night, and in the article it says next Wednesday. So I'm not sure if they're talking about today or if they're talking about next Wednesday, but either which way you slice it, huge, 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 huge deal. This is a major, major step for Iraq, and one that a lot of us are very, very excited about. So I just wanted to point that out also. Another interesting economic news, the fossil free indexes. There is the FFIUS, Fossil Free Indexes US, which is basically an investment vehicle that you can get involved with that has no investment in terms of fossil fuels, right? And the fossil fuel, the fossil free indexes of the U.S. had an incredible year last year. And a lot of people may not know this. And if you're looking to do some investing currently, the fossil free stuff is really going strong right now. Really, really strong. And it actually beat the S&P 500 by more than a percentage and a half last year. That's pretty significant. And it does show, you know, a lot of people were really concerned about the price of oil dropping because, you know, the high cost of oil has been a major motivation for people to get involved with solar and alternative energy. But as oil starts to get cheaper, those alternative energy doesn't look nearly as appealing. So a lot of people were, you know, saying, well, the alternative energy industry is really going to fail as this oil price has come down, because it's just not cost effective to get into it anymore. And that's not what we're seeing at all. We're actually seeing, because as the price of oil comes down, the cost to produce the equipment that's needed to generate solar power and things like that, the cost to produce those things goes down as well. So there is a little bit of a parity there going on. So again, fossil-free indexes might be something if you guys are looking to do some investing in 2015. Again, it topped the S&P 500 for investments by more than a percentage and a half. That's pretty substantial. So again, might be something you're looking into if you're part of the whole green movement and want to make some money in the process. That could probably be something you want to look into. Some people predicting that perhaps the Federal Reserve could surprise people with a premature rate hike later this year. I don't really think that that is very likely, but there is an article coming out of Blackstone today where Byron Wien, who's the vice chairman of Blackstone, they're a pretty large alternative asset investment firm. They're right now their cap is about $290 billion under management. So they do know, you know, kind of what they're doing. They seem to have a pretty good track record. But they're suggesting that there may be quite a few surprises in store for 2015. One of them that they think could possibly happen would be that the Feds would just automatically increase their rates prematurely. And the Feds came out last week in their little speech, the cryptic speech that they had, and they were using words like patient and after a considerable amount of time, which a lot of investors look at that as saying, okay, we're going to hold off on the rate hikes for a while, which is why the Fed seems to use those words in their speeches. But, again, some people not necessarily buying the hype and thinking that potentially, that there could be a sneaky rate hike sometime in the near future, which would obviously send the markets into turmoil and be crazy, but we'll see what happens. I want to talk quickly too about the Gallup poll. The CEO from Gallup essentially saying that this whole 5.6% unemployment rate is absolutely ridiculous. Doesn't take into all the same stuff you guys already know for sake of argument is that, you know, it doesn't take into account people who have decided to stop looking for work or people who have been unemployed for more than a year who have given up. So, but what's interesting is that it's the head of Gallup coming out and saying that, you know, we're being lied to, ladies and gentlemen. And it's not just some, conspiratorial guy coming out and saying that. It was the head of Gallup coming out and saying we're being lied to. So you can take that, you know, and stick that in your pipe and smoke it, I guess. And Standard & Poor, been having a pretty bad year this year, but they have now reached another $125 million agreement with the biggest pension fund in the U.S. to settle damages over overrating mortgage securities as sound investments just ahead of the housing market collapse back in 2008. The $125 million payout will go to the California Public Employees Retirement System. According to the Wall Street Journal and according to people who are familiar with the matter, S&P had given AAA ratings to junk securities that were actually not high-level assets, but backed by faulty mortgages, which eventually led to the collapse of the housing market in 2007 and 2008. The California Public Employees Retirement System took legal action against S&P back in 2009 and also is pursuing similar cases with Moody's and has also settled with Fitch, according to the Wall Street Journal. So what happened again? We already know all this story, but banks and mortgage firms doled out risky subprime loans to borrowers who couldn't really afford them and the debt that they were buying. And then the housing bubble essentially collapsed in 2008, which is why we're just basically recovering from a recession right now. If you believe that we're recovering from a recession right now, you know, Randy, I think you're right in the chat room. 27% seems a little more accurate when it comes to what our actual unemployment rate is right now. Excuse me. But that's what's going on in terms of that right now. Again, just, important that Gallup coming out and saying, you know, that's completely inaccurate. Okay, let's get into some tech news here real quick. There's a new website up that I think is pretty neat. It's called DarkLeaks. It's very similar to WikiLeaks. So what are they doing? DarkLeaks is basically a black market that they have put together. It runs on the Bitcoin blockchain, but it's designed specifically for leaking confidential secrets, Hollywood movies, and software exploits, and so on. So the introductory post describes DarkLeaks as some kind of tool that can trade any kind of confidential information using an ultra-secure and novel cryptographic mechanism. The software uses Bitcoin's blockchain to encrypt files which are released when payment is claimed by the leaker, according to DarkLeaks. Files are split into segments and then encrypted, and the segments are unlocked only when the leaker reveals the key by claiming his Bitcoin. So from the look of it, it seems like an offspring of WikiLeaks and torrent services kind of smushed together, preserving its limited morale The black market avoids listing life-threatening products like drugs or weapons to its list of tradable products. Instead, it relies heavily on Hollywood movies, government secrets, tax evasion, proofs, and dozens of other things that could probably really tick off the tie-wearing criminals there in Washington. But among the unethical trades are celebrities, private pictures, and military intelligence details. But if you are some sort of whistleblower and you're trying to get some information out, dark leaks might be something that you want to look into. Let's see here. What else? There's a new material, a solar cloth. This is pretty cool. An England-based solar cloth company has created a lightweight photovoltaic fabric solar panel system that can operate pretty much anywhere. The company's founder, Perry Carroll, says the symptom is currently being marketed for the use on parking lots, rooftops, and other places that traditional solar panels might not be practical. But according to the specifications of the equipment, it is a 10-square-meter portion of, well, it's a solar panel, but it's made out of cloth. The whole cloth, 10 square meters, weighs 7.3 pounds, which when you consider it compared to a traditional solar panel, which would weigh about 50 pounds. So we're talking about a major, major increase. And another advantage is that it's flexible. So you can add, adds to its versatility and ability to be installed pretty much anywhere. And I love this. I think this is an absolutely outstanding product. And solar cloth, man, you imagine you could now have a solar-powered hoodie or something like that, power all your cell phone stuff just walking around. I think that's pretty cool. Good stuff there. Okay, what else is going on right now? Let's see. The FCC is going to step up this week and announce an actual proposal to reclassify the broadband ISPs as common carriers under Title II of the Communications Act of 1934. So, again, Wheeler, who is the head of the FCC now, he is going to be absolutely submitting this proposal this week. So we shall see how this is all going to go down. But I think that it's a good thing. I think getting Title II that gets all of the nosy internet service providers kind of out of the game, and it will make it more of a universal thing for everybody. So, you know, if you have feelings on it one way or the other, now is a good time to get in touch with your representatives at the FCC. Ob, I don't know how long the solar cloth has been out, brother. It seems like it's just come out. They're still shopping it around to major companies. So I think it's probably still in the beta phase. Sorry about that. Ladies and gentlemen, answering a call in the chat room. And if you guys are in the chat room, you know what we were talking about. So there you go. Let's see here. UK also announcing the launching of a massive propaganda campaign. According to the Financial Times, the British Army will receive one of the more contentious special forces units of the Second Cold War, or will revive one of the most contentious special forces units of the Cold War, as a new generation of Facebook warriors will now wage complex and covert information and subversive campaigns. According to The Guardian, the British Army is creating a special force of Facebook warriors skilled in psychological operations and use of social media to engage in unconventional warfare in the information age. Against a background of 24-hour news, smartphones, and social media such as Facebook and Twitter, the force will attempt to control the narrative. Straight from The Guardian, ladies and gentlemen, the UK now attempting to control the narrative online by reviving a Cold War. Yeah, anyway, so that's what's going on in the UK right now. Good stuff going on. Let's move on to some health news because there is a little bit. We have to talk about this story. I'll tell you what, this is crazy stuff here. Herbal supplements. Do you guys buy your herbal supplements at Walmart or Target or GNC? Okay. Herbal supplements such as ginkgo biloba and ginseng sold at 4 major U.S. retailers contained ingredients, including potential allergens, not listed on the packaging, according to a report now from the New York State Attorney General's office, right? This is a pretty damning investigation of store brand supplements at GNC, Target, Walgreens, and Walmart. It has triggered 4 cease and desist letters to the retailers, calling on them to halt sales of 7 dietary supplements, including echinacea, garlic, ginkgo biloba, ginseng, saw palmetto, St. John's wort, and valerian root. They say that contamination, substitution, and falsely labeling herbal products constitute deceptive business practices and, more importantly, present considerable health risks for the consumers. And I would agree with it to that extent. The New York State Attorney General's office tested the products using a process called DNA barcoding, which assesses ingredients through their genetic makeup. The investigators tested 24 products that claimed to contain the seven herbs. All products but five contained DNA that was either indistinguishable or from a plant not included on a product's ingredient list. So five of the 24 products contained wheat, and two of them contained beans, which are both common allergens, without identifying those labels on the product label, right? And Walmart actually fared the worst in all of these tests. All six of their supplements were found to have extra ingredients not listed on the packaging. Target's products came out looking pretty good, but even the tests of its product showed only one of six supplements had completely accurate ingredient listings. Walgreens told the New York Times that it would take the products out of stores nationwide immediately. Walmart and GNC said the companies would eventually respond appropriately to the investigation, and Target has not responded at all. But again, if you're buying your supplements from one of those big mega stores, shame on you. You need to be supporting local businesses and finding good supplements out there, because it's just, you know, the supplement market, again, is not really that controlled in terms of the FDA and things like that. So it really is a situation of buyer beware out there, and there are plenty, plenty, plenty of good companies that do know what is in their ingredients, that can show you documents to back up what they're selling you. I would just highly recommend people do some research before you just buy stuff because the price is cheap. That's not the right way to be shopping for your health. You don't just go to Walmart and get the store brand crap just because it's less expensive. That's just doing yourself a detriment there, in my opinion. But anyway, that's what's going on in your natural health world in terms of supplements there. And I got to talk about this Chris Christie situation too. Chris Christie, obviously the governor of New Jersey there, has kind of run into some friction with Barack, because he came out in the news yesterday, suggested that there needs to be a balance between the government and parents in terms of parental choice and their views on vaccines. He basically said it needs to be a measure of choice. People need to be able to decide whether or not their kids are going to have vaccines or not, right? Which goes against the president's recent statements, because on an interview with NBC, he said very clearly this week that you should get your kids vaccinated. Although, interestingly enough, Christie's statements kind of do go hand in hand with how Barack Obama reportedly felt back in 2008. This is what Barack Obama said in 2008. He said, "We've seen a skyrocketing autism rate. Some people are suspicious that it's connected to vaccines, this person included." So he's talking about himself. He says, "The science right now is inconclusive, but we have to research it." He said this at a Pennsylvania rally back in April of 2008. John, for the love of God, McCain said something very similar. He said, "It's indisputable that autism is on the rise among children. The question is, what is causing it?" He says, "And we go back and forth, and there's strong evidence to indicate that it's got to do with a preservative in vaccines." John McCain, February 29, 2008. Chris Christie said, "Mary Pat and I," talking about his wife, "have had our children vaccinated. We think it's an important part of being sure that we protect our health and the public health." But he also says, "I understand that parents need to have some measure of choice in these things as well. That is the balance part." So again, there you go. Don't get your shots, ladies and gentlemen. Don't do it. Don't make your kids do it. That's all I'm going to say about that. We're going to be right back with James.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR. Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
The wicked ones obviously under heavy Masonic influence.
FrequencyRadio.com. Very good way for you guys to reach out to me and also to our guests as we have them, and definitely appreciate any questions you guys might have for Mr. James Perloff when we get into this conversation that we're about ready to have. So first and foremost, let me let you guys know, if you guys don't know who James Perloff is, he is an amazing researcher and a historian and an amazing author as well. He's contributed to the New American magazine since about 1986. His first book, Shadows of Power, which was an expose of private influence on American foreign policy, sold over 100,000 copies. I have a couple of James's books, and they are absolutely outstanding. You can go to, the website is jamesperloff.com, and you'll be able to find some more information about him there. But he's been a guest on over 100 radio shows, lots of television programs. He talks a lot about history. He also talks a lot about the creation-evolution debate. Very, very interesting stuff. He's got four different books that he's written on the elite governing America, on Darwinism, and the relationship among institutions that dominate American politics from behind the scenes. So again, one of my all-time favorite people to speak with outside of the radio show, just because he's so well-documented and he's so detail-oriented. And so, James, first of all, thank you very much for coming back onto the program today. Really appreciate you joining us.
Well, thank you, JD, and thank you for all you're doing to bring the truth to people, which is something they really need to hear in a time when mainstream media has got the microphone population.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's the name of the game here. You know, we're trying to create a forum so that we can bring, our listeners the best guests and the best information out there, which is why we want to bring you on the show as often as humanly possible, because you seem to pick on, these topics that are very topical. They're very, current. But it's the way that you do it, James, is what I really like about it, because you seem to delve back into history and back into details to show us very specifically how we got into the mess that we're in right now. And that also that we shouldn't be surprised that we're in the mess right now, because the same people have been getting us into these messes for such a long time. I was really interested in the article that you've written recently about kind of the evolution, or the ebb and the flow of the Cold War, and also the ebb and the flow of the War on Terror, because it seems like we're kind of in this murky situation in between where they didn't quite let the Cold War go, and then they ramped up the War on Terror, and that kind of didn't really take very well. So now we're kind of ramping up the war on Russia again. But at the same time, there's still these players out there that are still, you know, active in the terror thing. And it's just a murky, murky situation. So I wanted to have you come on the show and see if you could talk a little bit about, A, why it was so important for you to decide right now to write an article like that. Why do you feel like it's important to look back a little bit in an attempt to look forward, James?
Well, I found that because we do have this almost monolithic oligarchy of banksters and satanic figures that have been controlling world events for many decades and actually for centuries, you see that there is a cohesive plan, an overall plan. And one of the things that had really taken a lot of us by surprise in the 1980s was when Gorbachev came to power and he introduced glasnost and perestroika. And what was really weird about that was that the communists had consolidated their power. They had been ruthless. They'd killed tens of millions of people. And even the Black Book of Communism, which is published by Harvard University, which is very liberal, of course, Harvard, estimates that the communists killed close to 100 million people. Other estimates put it above that. They never had any qualms about stating their goal of world domination. They had established a ruthless totalitarian state in one nation after another, beginning with the Soviet Union in 1917. So when Gorbachev just suddenly said, you know, we're not going to do that anymore. You know, we're going to be friendly and, you know, we're going to have freedoms now. And this spread to other communist states, of course, as well, China and to Southeast Asia, where we see free enterprise, where once we're fighting communism there in Ho Chi Minh. And it just didn't make sense. It didn't make sense at that time. And a lot of us were big-time skeptics. Mm-hmm. And there was a book that came out that really validated that skepticism. It was called New Lies for Old, and it had been written by the highest-ranking KGB defector ever to come to the West during the Cold War. His name was Anatoly Golitsyn, and his book was called New Lies for Old. And he had predicted glasnost 5 years before it happened. He made 148 predictions. 139 of them came true. He predicted the fall of the Berlin Wall, liberalization throughout Eastern Europe, independence or alleged independence, the rise of a Gorbachev-like leader. He didn't know what his name was going to be yet. Mm-hmm. But he said he'd been briefed on this at the highest levels of the KGB. He said, this is just going to be temporary. You've seen a temporary deception. So a lot of us were kind of sitting back and saying, okay, just wait, this isn't going to last. But it did last. China's nothing like it was under, it's still statist, it's still, a strong centralized government, but it's nothing like it was under Mao Zedong.
Right.
And so I was recently looking back and revisiting that, and I realized that as the communist threat vanished, you know, or JD, what we really should have had is a great time. Hey, the communist threat, which the Cold War is over. We should be able to live in peace now and
right. Just
focus all our finances on the American economy. Things should be great. Mm-hmm. But instead, at the same time that the Cold War disappeared, the war on terror began. And look at the dates. Gorbachev comes to power in 1985. And then the year after that, 1986, Reagan launches the very first round of the war on terror when he bombs Libya for an alleged attack by Libya, a terror attack on the a discotheque in Berlin, which was frequented by American servicemen. We lost a couple men there and quite a few were wounded. And if you've read Viktor Ostrovsky's book, I quote him in that article. Viktor Ostrovsky, of course, a former Mossad agent, in his book, The Other Side of Deception, revealed that the intelligence that the U.S. picked up was entirely created by Mossad. They planted a transmitter in Libya called the Trojan that made it look like Libya was congratulating the terrorists on it. And so we were faked out, as we've been faked out by a zillion false flags since then.
Right.
And then I'll quit here in a minute, but in 1991, the Soviet Union officially broke up in 15 republics. 1991, we fought our first land war in the Middle East. And ever since then, we have been fighting countless wars in the Middle East. And it occurred to me that, of course, the banksters have had, not only were they the ones who financed communism from the beginning, as we well know, and it's widely documented by people like Joseph Finder and Red Carpet and famously Anthony Sutton and Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, but they've also been behind the Zionist movement, which their plan is to seat their world government, their satanic world government, to have its capital in Jerusalem. Right. And it appears that when the in order to get the United States to fight all these wars in the Middle East, it was necessary to eliminate the perception of this Cold War Soviet threat, because if people thought they were under threat of nuclear attack by the Soviet Union, well, it's going to be pretty hard to throw the full brunt of our American military against the Middle East as we've been doing for the last few years. So I think that was the plan, and I think that is at least a major reason why Glasnost happened.
Wow. Okay. Well, so I want to back up just a little bit and try and get some historical perspective around the Cold War, because I'm not somebody who's very familiar with the Cold War. I'm trying to get my mind around whether or not there was an actual boogeyman, or whether or not, you know, we essentially allowed Russia, or Russia was independent and they were just doing what they were doing, you know, with the slaughter of 100 million people. Did we just take that theme and run with it and ramp it up to a point where we were able to use that to, you know, dictate policy? How much of the boogeyman was real? How much of it was fake? You know what I mean? Like, where did the timeline really start that communism was going to be the official boogeyman of the Cold War?
Well, it was real and fake in the sense that the Soviet Union was built up. It did have nuclear weapons, which were certainly daunting in their capability of destruction. It was fake in the sense that it had been created by these banksters in the West. And this is even true of our own homegrown Communist Party. They were taking their orders from these wealthy bankers at the top. I mean, your street level communist had no idea. I was a hippie myself back in 1970. And, I used to hawk the, Boston Phoenix, which is a very, ultra left wing newspaper. And when the, newspaper merged with a more commercial paper called Boston After Dark, the most radical, left wingers on the editorial staff formed their own paper called The Real Paper. It was called The Real Paper because they wanted people to know this is the real hippie newspaper.
Right.
The owner and publisher of that newspaper was actually David Rockefeller Jr. And, The Real Paper. And so I, at the time I thought, well, David Rockefeller Jr. must be rebelling against his father's conservative capitalism. But no, these guys have been in bed. Capitalism and communism and Marxism have been in bed all along. And if you go back to the beginning, the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution, it was the same banksters. You had Trotsky and Lenin sent into Russia after the Tsar had abdicated. When the Tsar abdicated, he did so after the Rothschilds had used Freemasonry and sent in their agent, Lord Alfred Milner, to bribe the Tsar's army to join the rioters after an artificially created bread shortage and led to a rioting in Petrograd, then the capital of Russia. And then Trotsky was sent in by Jacob Schiff and Paul Warburg, who were the heads of Kuhn Loeb, which is the Rothschild's banking satellite in New York City. They sent him with $20 million in gold. And Lenin came in from Germany. Paul Warburg, of course, the founder of the Fed, his brother Max Warburg persuaded the German government to send in Lenin on the grounds that if the communists succeeded, they would pull Russia out of the First World War, which they did. So all around, you've got the Rothschilds, the Warburgs, the Schiff, Kuhn Loeb, financing this revolution. By the way, they got a lot of wealth back. They, Lenin and Trotsky sent a lot of wealth back to Kuhn Loeb and to the bankers in Europe. And, actually the Grand Orient Lodge of Paris, rebuilt itself using money that had been sent back to them by Lenin and Trotsky. And this is, you can see this documented in Jui Lina's, great book, Under the Sign of the Scorpion, which just came out in a new edition, but there's an online PDF version that people can read. But right. So it started, it was financed all through the Cold War. Give you some examples. I'm going to quote from Joseph Finder's book, Red Carpet. Quote, the Chase National Bank was the Soviet government's leading lender from the time of the revolution. During the 20s, it financed Soviet imports of American cotton. When AmTorg, the Soviet trade mission in the United States, was established in 1924, Chase agreed to handle its promissory notes, letters of credit to aid the import from Russia of fur, timber, and precious metals. In 1926, Chase advanced the Soviet government revolving credit of $30 million, unquote. Now, it just goes on. The Ford Motor Company built them, the Gorky truck plant, which produced trucks for the Vietnam War. The Rockefellers, Chase Manhattan, financed the Kama River truck factory, which they used to build vehicles for the Afghanistan invasion. Avril Harriman was doing big business with them, agreed to sell their bonds. Arm & Hammer of Occidental Petroleum built factories for them, and he had private land jet in Moscow, as did David Rockefeller, private landing rights during the Cold War.
Oh my God.
No less. So this is all going on. And in England, Victor Rothschild, the powerful banker, was sending them nuclear secrets. And this is all brought out in the book, The Fifth Man, by Roland Perry, which not surprisingly has been ignored by the mainstream press. So you got the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds working hand in glove all during the Cold War with them. And one of the ironies of the Cold War was when David Rockefeller in 1964 went to Russia, right after that Khrushchev was fired as premier, and people said, this can't be a coincidence, you know, these guys are still calling the shots.
Right.
And so, it was a psyop, but no question that they built up the Soviet Union, that they destroyed the Christian church within. They're very serious about what Karl Marx said about religion being the opiate of the people. They're very serious about creating a totalitarian state and genocide and population control as they are in America today, from eugenics a few decades ago to abortion to today with the GMOs, weather control and vaccines, and all the way they're taking down the population. But this is part of an overall plan. But that's the Cold War, yet they turned it on and then they turned it off when they were ready. I should mention, J.D., not to carry on too long, but part of the Cold War strategy was not only to dominate that half of the globe which the communists took over, but they used it to consolidate the West, that is NATO, creating this across the Atlantic alliance. What NATO wasn't supposed to stop at being a military alliance. They actually envisioned a complete alliance. The Marshall Plan was sort of the economic underfooting of that, and they actually envisioned a state that they called a, and they introduced legislation before the American Congress that would have created a union, turned NATO into a union. And this is in the 1950s and 60s, but it was rejected by Congress. That's where they were going to consolidate these alliances, and that's probably what you are seeing now when you have of Putin being used to advocate what they're calling the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, the TTIP.
Right. That Greece just came out and said that they're going to try and veto that when they vote on it here at the EU coming up. So it's interesting to me. I mean, this is obviously we're getting a little off track here, but it's interesting to me to see some of the strange bedfellows that are being created right now. Turkey to me has got to be the most unusual situation in the Middle East right now, where they're, you know, essentially kind of working with the United States to try and overthrow Assad, but at the same time they're part of NATO and they've got trade alignments or trade agreements now coming up with some of the other countries that are not with NATO. And it's just Turkey to me seems like a very strange situation that, you know, I don't know. I know I'm getting a little bit off track. James, I want to come back to, since we're talking about kind of the Cold War and how some of that agenda came about. I read recently about how some people believe that the banking institutions, we're talking about the Rothschilds and stuff like that, really kind of laid the groundwork for Hitler to come in as well by destroying the German economy and really making a situation there where a popular uprising could exist kind of at the end of World War One. Does your research indicate that that is accurate?
That they were trying to set up the Germans as well to...
Yeah, or to create a condition where an uprising could exist, you know, and somebody like Hitler could take over.
Well, they they tried to introduce communism into other countries after the Soviet Union, of course, in Hungary and then under Bela Kun and Germany with Karl Radek and Rosa Luxemburg as actually the you could rightly say that the Hitler and the Germans opposed that. They were deadly serious about pressing the Bolshevism, which they saw had done so much genocidal activity within the Soviet Union and Ukraine. One of the things that I found on my research is true that outset, the National Socialist Workers' Party, what we called it in the West, the Nazi Party, they didn't actually call it that in Germany, did accept some financing from Wall Street. And it appears that that occurred at the time that Trotsky was thrown out of Russia by Stalin. You know, they had that, rivalry, between Trotsky and Stalin, and the banksters certainly favored Trotsky, and it looks as if they backed for a brief period of time in the hopes that he would knock out Stalin, and of course that war did eventually break out. But the Germans, ultimately they rejected Western financing after they first received it. I have a lot of documentation that actually indicates to me, and I know this is controversial, within, alternative media, that the Germans were in fact the deadly opponents of this whole Rothschild banking clique. They, were certainly the enemies of the Zionists. They, refused to accept, the loans coming from the West. They didn't have any gold because it had been drained out of them as part of the reparations program after World War I. They set up a bartering system to the banksters. And actually, I want to back this up with some quotes. I'm going to give you a couple of quotes. I don't want people just to think I'm making this out of my head. I'm going to quote William Guy Carr. William Guy Carr was, one of the best analysts of this whole conspiracy. He wrote Pawns in the Game, and he was actually on top of the Bilderberg in 1955. He was already documenting the Bilderberg movement, which most people didn't wake up to until two or three decades later. But
right.
here's what he wrote, okay? He wrote about Hitler. Quote, Hitler antagonized the international bankers when he announced his financial policy and monetary reform program. Italy, Spain, and Japan to back him in his determination to challenge the power of the cartels and monopolies financed and controlled by the international bankers, particularly their brainchild, the Bank of since the Great War, the international bankers had set up 26 central banks that were modeled after the Federal Reserve. Paul Warburg's creation of 1913 had been steadily attempting a banking organization that would acknowledge no authority on this planet as above it. Hitler knew that if Warburg and his associates had their way, the Bank of International Settlements would become as autocratic as the Bank of England in regard to British affairs. Hitler decided to take a definite stand and refused to allow Germany to be merged into the League of Monopolistic States secretly controlled by agents of the Illuminati, unquote. That's one quote. I'll give you one more. This is from Arthur Laurie. He was a very distinguished British chemist, professor, and member of the Royal Society of Edinburgh. He wrote this in his book, The Case for Germany, 1938, quote, as long as Germany and Italy are under their present governments, they will not touch foreign loans. And Germany, by her method of internal economy and trading, has eliminated the international financier and those who make profits by playing with foreign exchanges. That is doubtless why the government is being forced by the city, meaning London, to start a war with Germany, unquote, Arthur Laurie. So I'm under the impression that Germany, when you have to remember this, American people today still believe that Germany was trying to conquer the world, which is right. Absurd. The invasion of Russia, which was the creation of the bankers, it wasn't just Germany; it was Finland, the army of Croatia, and Italy, and Romania, and Hungary. It was a war on Bolshevism, and as far as I'm concerned, World War II was the war to save Stalin's ass. That was all about. That's why they hurried ahead to provoke Japan to Pearl Harbor because, you and I did a show on Lusitania. The Germans were not taking the bait as they had with the Lusitania. They would not do it. And Germany had to be destroyed. Germany was utterly nationalistic. It could not be absorbed into a world government. It was not part of the League of Nations. Germany and Japan were the bulwarks that stood in opposition to this Bolshevik empire that the banksters had created. And just look at the carpet bombing of Germany and the nuclear bombs dropped on Japan. You know, these people were not working for the Illuminati. These were sort of the last vestiges of nationalism being cleared out of the way, as far as I can determine.
Wow, that's pretty substantial, James, because a lot of people definitely would not, you know, unless you had read those things, or if you hadn't read those things, I don't think people would have believed you. A lot of people want to believe that the Nazis were funded by the Bush family and, you know, similar things like that. But the idea that they may not have been in line with the Rothschild banking dynasty, it makes sense because look at all of the other people that have stepped up against the Rothschild banking dynasty. Little guy named Gaddafi comes to mind. Another little guy named Saddam comes to mind. You know, it's like like all of these situations seem to stem from that same decision to go again. I mean, look at what's going on with Putin right now, trying to get the BRICS bank set up and being ostracized and being stigmatized by the West. That's a really interesting idea that perhaps Hitler was not in line with the banking cartel. But then you also have to look at like the fact that he was being supplied by IG Farben, which I think was run by one of the Rothschilds' minions, right? Was it one of the Habsburgs or one of the I can't remember who was in charge of the IG Farben at the time, but it is pretty substantial how much money these people made just from the war efforts, you know, both on both sides. So man, it's just really interesting, James. I don't know what else to say other than that. That's really interesting.
I have no doubt that the Illuminati had bankers and people of influence operating within Germany. And you're right, that certainly IG Farben had its own American branch. That was the main creator of chemical supplies for the German war machine. It may well be true that they, you know, certainly wanted to get a world war going and that they may have been willing to finance the Germans to that extent. But if you look at the propaganda, absolutely all out anti-German, anti-Japanese, and the unconditional surrender and absolutely ruthless bombing and bringing these nations into utter and complete submission, I do not look on them as being agents of the Illuminati or the Rothschilds, but rather that's something to clear now. Very different from the way they treat. Just look at the hypocrisy that occurred during World War II when the clash broke out, and I'll call it a clash between Poland and Germany. Immediately, France and England declared war on Germany, on the pretext that they were so concerned about Poland's national sovereignty and freedom and independence. But that same month, September of 1939, Stalin invaded Poland, and France and England said nothing. They did nothing. They didn't declare war. They ignored it. And Stalin ended up being the recipient of huge amounts of Western aid, in spite of the fact that he was just as much an aggressor easily as the Germans. He had invaded the Baltic states, you know, Estonia, Lithuania, and Latvia.
Right,
he invaded Finland. He invaded Belarus. The Bolsheviks had conquered one nation after another, which they absorbed into the Soviet Union. They were on certainly you could make out the case that they were on an agenda of world conquest. Yet this was not discussed in mainstream media, which kept its attention entirely on Japan and Germany as allegedly trying to conquer the world.
Right. Well, it's just crazy because then it just shows you very specifically that the powers that be are only going to react to a situation when it behooves them. It's this whole Hegelian dialect, progen, you know, problem, reaction, solution thing. So like what you're saying, you know, with the Stalin's invasions, nothing was done. Nobody cared, you know, because it didn't suit their purposes, in an overall scheme to either make money or, foster war, do whatever it is that these people do, you know, sell products, things like that. So very, very interesting stuff. James, we're going to have to go to a quick 3-minute break. It's our only one of the show. And then when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the transition between the Cold War and the War on Terror, and talk about some of the similar situations, the people involved, things like that. Because I think that, again, a lot of these players that are involved with the creation of the boogeyman can be seen across the board, no matter where you look. So we're going to take this 3-minute break. Our guest today, James Perloff, author, historian, amazingly insightful young man, and we were going to be right back. So do stay here, ladies and gentlemen. Keep it right here. 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your coworkers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sil, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sil?
He's part of the family now, Deke.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him right here on Freedom Link, Monday to Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money? Has a storage life of 100 years. All for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. 910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine Now. Only at MUSA.org.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you had the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a one-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Sea Vault, 20 sea varieties for only $37.95, Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com, for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
The White Buffalo with John Phillips.
Tuesday through Thursdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Aaron, I'll do my best to steward them to him. Before the break, we were talking quite a bit about the history of the Cold War and about everything that's kind of transpired with that. But James, I'm curious if you could, if you had to. I know we talked a little bit about the birth of the War on Terror essentially being under the helm of Ronald Reagan there, but I want to kind of get into those details a little bit. Now, was this an actual War on Terror, or is this like a response to some blowback from a situation that we might have created, you know, going back in time? I'm trying to really kind of get my mind on where this War on Terror actually began and whether or not it's actually legitimate. What are your thoughts on all that, James?
Well, certainly not legitimate. I mentioned the Reagan's bombing of Libya. So as the beginning, in the sense that that was the first actual blow struck by the United States, it was the first military action against one of the nations of MENA, meaning the Middle East and North Africa, one of the first attack on a Muslim nation by the United States. So that was where it, the first blood was drawn. Okay. And that was also a false flag. And as you know, whether it was the baby incubators in 1991 or the totally missing weapons of mass destruction for the war in Iraq in 2003, or the phony chemical weapons attack alleged to be conducted by Assad, after which that didn't work, so they went back to the drawing board and apparently right. came up with these beheading videos. Or we got to bomb Gaddafi by NATO more recently, take him out because he's a dictator, and you know, there's an uprising, which of course is being sponsored by Western intelligence services because Gaddafi was about to introduce this gold backed currency for Africa. That's what he was proposing, and
right.
Libya was actually, as I understand, the most prosperous nation in that entire region.
Oh man,
an average. Yeah. Average income of $15,000 per person, which in the North Africa, that's fantastic. They had to take them out. And so we'll see. But the thing is, another thing about that I want to stress is the fact that these wars were foreknown, and I'm sure you and many of your listeners are familiar with Wesley Clark, General Wesley Clark's comments on taking out, he said, quote, we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. And, I have the video clip of him just embedded it from, YouTube on my website on that article, Cold War begins, so the war on terror, the Cold War ends, so the war on terror could begin. Mm-hmm. But just Google that or look up the search terms on YouTube, and you can see Wesley Clark talking about in 2001, the decision had already been made in the Pentagon to take out these 7 countries. And you see these countries now being taken out. Obviously, the decision was made in advance. They were going to have to come up with false pretexts like weapons of mass destruction, which were never found.
Right.
So this was part of an agenda. This is part of a plan. The other man I quoted was Patrick Buchanan. He wrote a column in 2004, called Have the Neocons Destroyed a Presidency? And here's what he said in that. He said, quote, in 1996, in a strategy paper crafted for Israel's Netanyahu, Richard Perle, Douglas Feith, and David Wormser urged him to, quote, focus on removing Saddam Hussein from power, unquote, as an Israeli strategic objective. Perle, Feith, Wormser were all on Bush's foreign policy team on 9/11.
Wow.
And January 1st, 2001, 9 months before 9/11, Wormser called for U.S.-Israeli attacks to, quote, broaden the Middle East conflict to strike fatally the regimes of Damascus, Baghdad, Tripoli, Tehran, and Gaza, to establish the recognition that fighting with either the United States or Israel is suicidal, unquote. That's from Pat Buchanan. And this quote, that quote from Wormser was from 1998, so you know that they were already planning to take out these nations before any of these false flags of wars began. Mm-hmm. So this is part of an overall plan. And that's when it kind of clicked with me that the beginnings of this really started at almost the exact moment that the Cold War ended. It seems that there was a shift in focus from the communist end of it to the Zionist end of it. That was going to be the focus of our military efforts.
Right. Well, and then enter into the scene ISIS. What, who, how, what is going on, James? Tell me about ISIS in terms of your research, because I honestly cannot figure out who's funding them, who started this organization, what their goals are. I'm kind of sitting here pointing towards Israel right now, but I don't know that for sure. Please, if you could elucidate us as to what the heck is going on with ISIS. Who are they? What do they want?
One of the best articles I've seen is one by David Livingstone on Henry Mackle's site, and people can Google that about the whole history of ISIS. But my own belief is that sort of a little bit beyond ISIS with the Muslim terror threat is that there was a paradigm shift, and I have an article on this too on my website, but in 2013, there was a significant moment in the evolution of all of this when Rand Paul did a filibuster protesting domestic drone strikes, and the opinion polls, which the establishment pays very close attention to, showed the American public was very much behind Rand Paul on that. Hmm. That same month, March of 2013, there was a tremendous alarm over the fact that Homeland Security had requisitioned over 1.5 billion rounds of ammunition, and people were wondering, well, why do they need that kind of ammunition? That's enough to kill every American man, child 5 times over. And also that same month, it came out that they'd requisitioned over 2,700 surplus armored vehicles from the military. And people were saying, if Homeland Security is all about fighting terrorism, why do they need all these vehicles and ammunition?
Right.
And I at that point, I believe that the expansion of police state powers in America had ground to a temporary halt. The compatriots were saying, enough's enough. There's enough police state powers now. We've got to stop it. So what happens 1 month after that? April of 2013, you've got the Boston Marathon bombing. And when that bombing occurred, we're all waiting. And then we're thinking, okay, which domestic protest group is going to be targeted right. or blamed for this, right?
Right.
But instead, it was Muslims. And what has occurred to me, JD, is that in order to get patriots to again accept Homeland Security and furthering the police state powers, more Patriot Act empowerment for the government, they had to go back to the original paradigm that they used on 911, which is make Americans think we're being attacked from the outside.
Right.
That had worked like a charm on 911. And the, you know, they've been very little in the way of Muslim terrorist activities within the United States since then, but because of this, this cries, even within the halls of Congress to stop the police state, I think that's why they went back to, okay, let's go back to the drawing board, let's bring out the Muslim terrorists again, and start making everyone think that this is the deal. And when they did not get the airstrikes on Syria, it was almost sadly comical when okay, we didn't get airstrikes on Syria. The American people were saying where it was war with Libya, war with Afghanistan, war with Iraq. How many of these wars do we have to have? So they went back and they came out with these beheading videos. And, you know, I'm thinking if I'm the head of ISIS, why would I behead Americans and British people knowing that that's going to bring down the full brunt of the American military establishment? But if I'm an ISIS strategist, I want to consolidate my control out there. I don't want the American military machine coming down on me.
Right.
Why would I upload these beheading videos, which are going to provoke that? So I think this is a wag the dog scenario. I don't have proof of that.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at the fact that, that we've seen so many other false flags, you know, go back to the Kuwaiti incubator babies, you know, go back to the Mossad faking us out for those Reagan bombings in 1986. It's happened again and again and again. The Pentagon working hand in glove with the CIA and the Mossad and the banksters that are financing the government from behind the scenes to bring about this new world order. I think that is the explanation of ISIS. And look what ISIS is doing. They're hitting everybody. They're hitting Japan. They're hitting Sydney. They're hitting Ottawa. It's like they're trying to tweak everybody's nose on the whole planet, right? To
right.
get the entire world going against them to get, to throw the Middle East into even greater chaos than it is right now. I do believe that, that we're looking at a PSYOP. And of course, it is broadly known and even occasionally acknowledged within the mainstream media that we were the ones who backed, financed, and trained ISIS a year ago when we were screaming that we had to have Assad overthrown in Syria.
Right. And that's what I want to get to is the fact that we're the ones who are paying for these guys. And that's, you know, the situation is just so astounding to me because we're trying to say, you know, we're supporting these moderate rebels, right, in Syria because the people that they're against, the government that they're against, Assad, is just so evil. He's just so evil. So we have to support these moderate rebels. But at the same time, those moderate rebels are funneling weapons to God knows who. There's a lot of conjecture out there about whether or not we're funding, along with Saudi Arabia, Al-Qaeda. And, you know, when ISIS first came out, they were like a splinter cell of Al-Qaeda. That's how they were presented to all of us. You know, it's like, oh, this smaller group of Al-Qaeda extremists have gotten together and now all of a sudden they're exploding. And, you know, I've been watching a lot of stuff recently about Israel's intent to fracture Iraq into three separate countries, which it did look like initially ISIS was going to accomplish. They had, you know, been pretty successful at isolating the Kurdish region to the north, and the rest of the country is pretty much in disarray right now. And there are indications going all the way back into the 80s saying that Israel was a fan of fracturing Iraq. But I still just don't understand, and maybe it's just because I'm slow, but how did this organization get so powerful so quickly? How did they get so well funded without, you know, us knowing about it or without our alleged awareness of the situation, James?
I don't know, but there's so much that we don't know, JD, because we're not privy to what goes on behind closed doors in the Pentagon's planning rooms or the CIA or the Mossad or MI6.
Right.
But they there's certainly countless billions of dollars at the disposal of these groups, fiat money that the Federal Reserve can just generate out of nowhere. And when you've got that kind of money and that kind of state-sanctioned system that the intelligence agencies always have, things can happen pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what do you think is going to be happening? I mean, obviously we're in the new year now. We've got reports that Putin is flying nuclear bombers over, you know, NATO countries. There was another big article this weekend about the UK having to scramble jets because Russian transport, you know, bombers over their nation. Obviously the situation in the Ukraine is still bad, but we still have this whole ISIS situation to deal with. Which situation do you think is going to become the most serious, you know, or where do you think we're going to go from here, James? What do you think is going to happen?
I don't know, but it seems that they're getting a lot of mileage out of the ISIS situation. They're really pushing that card hard right now. You know, as you and I were talking privately on the phone yesterday, they're throwing so many things at our senses on the news. It's hard to keep up. You know, it seemed for a while they're going to push the Ebola as some sort of a medical false flag to create, you know, quarantines and mandatory vaccination. That kind of vanished off of the radar screen for a while. There's right. so many, you know, the North Korean hack job that they used to push sanctions on. And then, of course, all the Malaysia losing three airliners. There's so many things that have been headlining the disappearance of MH370, never explained. It's really hard to keep up to speed with, but it does seem that they are very consistent with the ISIS. They seem to be looking at that as I've noticed one thing about the Illuminists is that they like to stick with a winner. We've talked about this on the show before, but, you know, atrocity stories were used to get the United States into the Spanish-American War, fake atrocity stories that appeared in William Randolph Hearst's Yellow Journal newspaper. And ever since then, they've stuck with a winner, fake atrocity stories, World War One, and all, you know, they continue, Assad's chemical weapon, that's another atrocity story.
Right.
Not to say that there weren't some chemical weapons used, but undoubtedly not by Assad, but by the people we were backing. So they like to stick with a winner. They seem to be sticking with ISIS right now. That seems to be, they had most recently the Jordanian pilot, and they just seem to be playing that for all it's worth to, it looks like, the Charlie Hebdo incident, we didn't even mention that yet.
Right.
It looks like they're pushing everywhere to get some kind of a worldwide, global governance police state in place. We know that that's their ultimate goal. It looks like maybe they're just testing out different things to see what works best, and ISIS seems to be doing a good job for them.
Well, I want to talk about the Charlie Hebdo attack because I'm curious about what your impression of it was. I was not really convinced when I was watching, you know, the footage of the police officers allegedly who was shot in the street. That didn't ring true for me at all. So I was still deep in the false flag narrative in my mind about this. But what are your thoughts on that situation?
Oh, yes, I thought that had false flag written all over it. You know, that video footage where they show the policeman being shot, it was, that footage was taken by the deputy editor of Israel's Channel 1. Now, what was
Wait
a television man from Israel doing right on the scene to
Are
capture an incident? Oh, yeah, he's the guy who took the footage. And remember this, too, that this was the timing did not make any sense from a Muslim perspective, because in December of 2014, we're talking just weeks before this happened, and the French government had passed a resolution that the government of France should recognize a Palestinian state. And 1 week before Charlie Hebdo, Israel called in France's representative to protest the fact that France had voted in the UN in favor of a resolution that would have forced Israel to withdraw to her 1967 borders. Why would Muslims suddenly take out 12 French citizens and turn French public opinion against them just when they've won these victories? The only person who stands to benefit from this is Israel. It's their guy from their Channel 1 in Israel who's taking this footage, and I've seen that footage too. Now, I know there's been some debate, but it doesn't look like the man was shot by a 747. His head doesn't move. There's no...
Right.
And the guys are shouting, we've avenged the prophet. It's very much for, you know, like with 911 where they left behind the Quran. They want to make sure everybody knows they're Muslims. And of course, they left behind their ID, which is strange because they took the trouble to put on these masks so no one could identify them.
Right.
And then the police identified them through ID that they accidentally left. You have to think that the guys who did the shooting on the street are probably crisis actors and are not the guys who were identified, were probably just patsy, dead, of course, within 24 hours or whatever the time frame was, so that there can never be any trial. And I also heard that one of the chief investigating officers committed suicide right in the middle of this.
Correct.
It's, not a very, why would he do that? It's not like the investigation was a failure or that they caught the guys pretty quickly, according to the mass media. Not that the French police didn't get results. Why would he commit suicide? Mm-hmm. Not to say that there couldn't have been an individual situation going on. And you may have also heard, I've heard from the press reports that the Rothschilds had bought Charlie Hebdo the month before this happened.
Which
is very reminiscent. That's very reminiscent of Shel Silverstein purchasing a lease on the Twin Towers six weeks before 9/11. And, of course, he got a $1 billion insurance payout on a $124 million investment on that. So it looks very much like it's got all the earmarks of a false flag, very much in keeping with the other false flags we've been seeing during this whole war on terror that's unfolded over the last decades.
Phew. Wow. I had absolutely no idea about the connection between the videographer and Israel. That to me completely blows my mind. Cause like you said, why would that guy be on a roof just happen to be there with his video camera? And even in that same footage, there's another guy on the roof with him that's got protective body gear on. He's got a protective vest on. And you think, you know, I realize that Hebdo has been threatened before, but I can't imagine that they would have a protocol in place that all the employees donned, you know, bulletproof vest, essentially, if something happened. So I'm completely with you. I don't believe that that gentleman was shot in the street, because physics pretty much indicates that that guy's head did not get shot with a 7.26 round. So I'm with you on that it was another false flag. And again, you got David Cameron coming out in the UK saying that we need to the battle is against encryption now. It's, you know, the battle is online and it's against these terrorists having any type of corner where they can communicate effectively with one another. So again, we're immediately sacrificing security for privacy. And I'm pretty sure there was a smarter guy than me that said something about that one time, thinking it wasn't that great of an idea. But again, that's the problem reaction solution situation that we see, you know, going forward and back as far as you look. So I'm trying to figure out essentially what's going on too between Israel and the United States right now. It seems like our relationship with them has really changed quite a bit in the last couple of months, especially. And I'm wondering if that has anything to do with maybe Barack's hidden religious proclivities. What do you think about any of that, James?
It seems that the United States has uniformly supported Israel through the decades, and that goes back. We've vetoed every resolution against Israel in the UN, dozens of them, quite often as the only nation to side with Israel. We've been with the Zionists for quite a long time. And I know that people talk about Barack Obama being a secret Muslim. I don't see that they would ever allow that to occur, that we would actually support Islam. They certainly are interested in fracturing it. I do know this much, as you do too, JD, that they like to play both sides.
Oh, yeah.
And I see a lot of Christian media talking about, whooping up about our president is a Muslim, and that when in fact, you know, I know that we've been supporting the whole so-called Arab Spring and the dismantling of the stability of the Middle East of Muslim states, really on behalf of Israel. We've been working on their behalf. And this, again, go back to the USS Liberty, when we didn't even have a congressional investigation after they attacked us and tried to sink the USS Liberty with almost 200 casualties. In fact, there was over 200, I believe, if you count the killed and wounded. And they tried to sink that ship. They tried to torpedo it. They were going in. That was during the Six-Day War. Of course, they wanted to bring America in on their side in that war. No investigation. The power of, it's not the power of a little country over America. It's the power of the Zionist bankers who financed Israel, who are calling the shots and making sure that we always lend our support to Israel. But I think that they're willing to play both sides a little bit, on this, and, as they always have. And, they don't mind if some people on, our end are alarmed about, the president being Muslim, because that just creates further, alarm about Islam itself and leads to further support for actions against the Muslim states.
Well, and it would add,
amongst American conservatives.
It would add to the divide and conquer motif that they're so powerful. You know, they obviously they want us racially divided. They would like us religiously divided. They certainly want us economically divided, and they've accomplished that, you know, pretty significantly, over the last couple hundred years. But we are kind of running out of time, James. We've got about 4 minutes left. Is there anything else that you think the listeners need to know about where we stand right now in either of these arenas with the Cold War 2.0 or with the War on Terror 2.0 that we seem to be in right now, bud?
Well, I just had a thought, JD, to follow up about playing both sides. Mm-hmm. And that was during the Vietnam War. They definitely played both sides. They were, of course, they had financed the war, the Pentagon, the war machine. But I don't know if you ever had Dave McGowan on your show.
No, I haven't.
Do you know who he is? He's, I learned from, MI6 officer John Coleman some years ago that the MI6 had, and Tavistock had really created the Beatles phenomenon.
Yes.
Well, what Dave McGowan goes into is, the relationship of the Pentagon, believe it or not, to the whole hippie movement and the whole hippie music movement out there. You know, Jim Morrison of the Doors, was actually the son of Admiral George Morrison, who was charge of the Tonkin Gulf Forces. And he documents that there was this remarkable, ironic, you might think, but a remarkable connection between the Pentagon and the hippie music scene, with many of those groups like America, Crosby, Stills, Papa John, Phillips, and the rest coming from career military families. Oh. Frank Zappa, too, you know. Mm-hmm. Absolutely amazing. So they were playing both sides, both the hippie side, the revolutionary side, and the Pentagon war machine side at that time. And so the reason I bring that up is it's not that ironic you would have them having Obama looking pro-Muslim while they're also supporting Israel at the same time. They don't mind playing both sides of a conflict to deepen the divisions within our nation.
Did Dave McGowan, is he the author of that Laurel Canyon book?
I finished reading it a couple months ago, and I was really stunned because I was into that whole music scene at the time, and it's quite revelatory, but not that surprising in light of what we now know, that so many psyops have been run on the American people, that was actually a psyop as well.
Well, they had to get out in front of the anti-war rhetoric, right? So they decided to create a whole bunch of these bands that they could then, you know, try and guide people off into a different direction, you know, the hippie movement essentially. But I read that book as well. I actually forgot that was the author because I gave that book away to a friend of mine who was a huge Doors fan, and she had no idea, you know, because when you look into the Doors, even Jim Morrison said that both of his parents died in a car accident, but that's not at all true. Like, he was definitely being funded by the military-industrial complex. And you mentioned a couple of people, but Zappa being kind of the grandfather of that entire group there in Laurel Canyon. Even what's his name, the guy with the swastika on his forehead that's in jail now, Manson was
Manson?
Part of that
group. Manson was interconnected,
hugely connected. And I'll tell you too, that book was really interesting to me because we had a guest on named Elsie Vincent who was talking about how the Rothschilds had basically taken over Western music in terms of the frequencies that are involved with each individual note, and then they institutionalize it with churches and things like that. So this idea of control stems, you know, goes into every single facet of our lives. You know, LC even told me that before the Laurel Canyon thing had happened, country western music was an absolute creation of the same military industrial complex. They wanted to take people from the Appalachian area and give them some music that would make them essentially depressed. That's what they did. And you know, I didn't know that, but that's again, the more you look back into history and see these details of control, it's staggering. It's staggering that we've succeeded to stay above water for as long as we have, don't you think, James?
Yes, by the grace of God, it is amazing that it seems that every time we turn around, we're learning something new. And this is, I think, because of the increased flow of information across the...
Yes.
And I are talking on Skype today. Yep. It's possible to connect and share facts that would have been impossible in the communications venue of a few decades ago.
I agree, brother. Man, we've got to run. James, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, JD.
Absolutely. Everybody, take care out there. That's the end of the broadcast tomorrow. Please join us again for Stan Deo. We will see you guys tomorrow. Take care, everybody.
Yeah. Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.